Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in this episode, we're exploring what happens when a school goes all in on coaching, not just as a buzzword, but as a way of thinking, leading and growing together. My guest today is Dr. Adrian Cam, principal at Westbourne Grammar in Melbourne, Australia, where coaching has moved from the sidelines to the centre of their leadership culture. In today's conversation, we'll hear how this shift began, what challenges were faced, and the positive ways it's impacted staff, students, and the wider school community. If you've ever wondered whether coaching can truly change the way a school operates, this conversation is for you. Adrian, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Richard, likewise. Thank you for the opportunity. Great to be here.
Fantastic. Looking forward to the conversation. Adrian, let's start with your story. What first drew you into education and how did that journey lead you eventually to becoming principal at Westbourne Grammar?
Thanks, Richard. Everyone has a unique story and mine's a little different. I actually studied mathematics and computer science in my undergraduate degree and I actually had a deep interest in cryptography, of all things. And finishing university, I did have grand plans of joining the Air Force or starting a career in government intelligence or something of that nature. However, those things didn't work out due to a number of reasons. So I did a postgraduate diploma in education and halfway through that year, got a phone call from a principal in a low socioeconomic rural school about an hour away from where I was living at the time. And he said, we really need a physics teacher. And I said, well, I'm not actually qualified yet. And he said, well, don't worry about that. When can you start? And so I actually started the next week as a permission to teach teacher whilst I was finishing my qualification. But this is my 18th year in education and I started my career in government schools. I did some work for the Department of Education here in Victoria, Australia. And then my last three roles have been in the independent or the private school education sector here in Australia. So I was a director of teaching and learning. I was a deputy principal, and now I'm a principal at Westbourne Grammar. And this is my fourth year as principal, but my fifth year at the school. And just some context very quickly, Westbourne Grammar, we have 2,300 students. We're a co-educational school, non-denominational. We're growing, and the school is in a fantastic position. But I think if I reflect on my career and what led me to this point, Richard, I didn't really initially set out with a clear plan to become a principal. But what I did enjoy from my very early days as a teacher was a love of learning. And that's basically what I embody today. And I have a curiosity about people, how they work, how they grow, and I've got a strong desire still to contribute meaningfully to the lives of young people, but also the staff that work in schools as well. And so what I really enjoy about being a principal, and I think what has drawn me to that role is the opportunity to have a larger sphere of influence and to lead at a level of culture, systems and strategy and to really look at building environments and designing environments where people can thrive, so where staff can thrive, students can flourish, and our entire community can feel connected. And so I actually think being a principal is one of the best jobs in the world.
Fantastic, fantastic. A very positive start. I love that comment, Adrian, at the very start, you talked about permission to teach teacher. Isn't that a lovely one? I was a permission to teach teacher. But again, at this point now, as leader of the school, two things amongst many that you mentioned there, to have a love of learning, which is absolutely key for the lead. Essentially, you're the lead learner in the school, but that curiosity of people is fantastic. So looking back over that and fairly lengthy leadership journey in many ways, what would you say were some of the key moments or turning points that helped shape your philosophy of leadership?
It's interesting to consider. I think looking back, it's not the easy wins that have shaped my leadership. It's definitely the difficult moments, the hard moments, the challenges, the setbacks, the failures. I think oftentimes we don't learn a lot from our successes, or we don't learn as much from our successes. We learn more from the challenges that we go through, the times where things didn't go to plan, and And I remember many moments, you know, sitting with discomfort or uncertainty and disappointment and, you know, making mistakes. And I think for me, I'm really fond of the poet Khalil Gibran, if you're familiar with this poet. And he has this quote that I talk about with my staff. And he says something along the lines of, out of suffering emerges the strongest of souls. And he basically means that, you know, your character is built through the scars, or your battle scars, so to speak. And I really love that, because I think that speaks to the truth of leadership. Because the most powerful learning for me has not come from the textbook or from sitting in a professional learning experience. It definitely comes from when you're tested. And I think a turning point for me early on in my leadership journey was, you know, reflecting on some of the mistakes I made. And they were real mistakes. But in doing so, what I learned was to listen more, to assume less. And to recognize that leadership isn't always about having the answer, but what it is about is holding space and helping others find the answer with you. And so I think, you know, some of the defining moments for me come through navigating organizational change. You know, if there's a change agenda in a school, you're working with people and you're navigating resistance and anxieties and fears. And in some of my previous experiences, I was navigating hostility. And I think that what that's taught me is that leadership is, you have to have a certain political savviness, but at the end of the day, it's about building trust. It's about being transparent, and it's about working alongside people. And so I think my philosophy of leadership's really been forged through those moments of challenge and difficulty. And today, I bring my experiences with me, and it really shapes my practice as a principal in terms of the way I see leadership as almost an act of humanity, if you like. Because we have a strategic plan at our school, and we've got three pillars: people, place, and programs. Now, people deliberately come first because we're human-centered organizations. And so for me, my philosophy very simply is about creating the conditions for others to thrive.
I like that. I like that. And it'll be fascinating for people listening through that. One thing that strikes me, Adrian, is a period of time. So you used a couple of keywords for me there. You used the word emerges. So from the poet, you know, inspired from the poetry, this idea of your leadership emerging, but also used the word in there forged as well. And I think that's really important, you know, for folks who are either leading at the moment or aspiring leaders in many ways. That's helpful. A phrase that I love when folks talk about maybe the lack of the pandemic, and I had the privilege in many ways of running a school through the pandemic. And it's not when you look back to what have I come through, but it's what have I grown through, which resonates really with what you said. And I think that's going to be really helpful for folks who are listening. So let's say before coaching became part of your professional world, and we'll get on to the coaching shortly, how would you really have described your leadership style?
I think when I was younger and with less experience and perhaps even before I'd really lent into coaching fully, I think my leadership was probably characterized by individual ambition, if I'm being honest, but also probably a real strong disposition towards innovation. I was always looking for ways to improve or ways to do things differently. That didn't always resonate with the people that I was working with. But I think my leadership style at that point in time was probably a little bit more directive, and I was probably very quick to offer solutions or my opinion. But I think reflecting over time and through my lived experiences, Richard, I definitely recognized the importance of reading the room, of reading the situation, of understanding team dynamics, trying to understand individuals, because we're all different. And that often you're going to get the best outcome, not by telling people what to do, but by empowering others and shifting from being the one that provides the answers or the solutions to being a leader who facilitates more and who guides their teams to discover their own answers, which in turn, as we know, builds their capacity and empowers them, equips them with some agency, And if we're talking about sustainable and long-lasting change, both at an individual and a school level, I think you would agree, Richard, that that's much more powerful in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's a phrase in there that I love that you've used, that idea of lived experiences, which ties in very much with what you mentioned earlier, that, you know, you're not going to learn this on a course. You know, leadership is lived experiences. And I really appreciate how, and listeners will as well, how you talked about, you know, I've grown through mistakes, you know, genuinely made, you know, your fair share of mistakes, which we all have, but it's been able to learn from that is what develops you as a leader. And you go back to those words of forged and emerges, which is really, really useful. Take us back then to when you first encountered coaching. Obviously, this is a coaching and education podcast. So when you encountered it first as a professional practice, what sparked your interest or curiosity in it?
I think that there's probably a couple of points that I could make there thinking about that time in my career and my life. I think I realized that to be the leader that I both wanted and needed to be, I had to develop this understanding of perspective, and I had to be able to zoom in on the detail, zoom out to see the bigger picture, but also to be able to zoom within and engage in a real self-reflective, a critical self-analysis, I think, of the way I go about my practices as a leader. And so that, I think, was the impetus to start looking at coaching. And then I think it was around 2013, so we're probably talking, what, 10, 12 years ago, I was introduced to the community in a new role as someone who was primarily going to be a coach of teachers. So that was basically my introduction to the school community as a director of teaching and learning. And I was introduced in that way because of the fact that I was very fortunate to be awarded some state and national awards for excellence in teaching. So I think the principal at the time had this vision that I was going to come in and help people with their teaching and you know, get better student outcomes and so on and so forth. But I didn't really know what coaching was at the time. And so I thought, oh, gee, I better start immersing myself in this coaching space. And so I started reading, and I'm an avid reader. Like, I probably read a book a week still. And so I read, you know, Jim Knight, Michael Stanier, John Whitmore. But then I even started reading things outside of the pure coaching space, and I was really drawn to a lot of the literature in the military, actually, around the way the military were changing from a hierarchical leadership model to a more of a distributed and decentralized leadership model, and how that was actually playing out on the ground. And so one of the seminal texts that I still refer to is the work of David Marquette, who was a U.S. submarine commander, and he has this great book called Turn the Ship Around. It's a story of turning followers into leaders. Mm-hmm. And it's all based around intentional leadership. So I started there, but then I, through my social networks and social media, I actually saw Chris Munro prior to him joining Growth Coaching International, and also Cameron Patterson, who has done a lot of work for Harvard, but is currently the Director of Teaching and Learning at Wesley College, which is another independent school here in Melbourne, Australia. And I saw them talking about this coaching thing a lot in their networks. And so I started following them along and become more and more interested. And then I think not long after, Chris joined Growth Coaching International. And it was at that point in time where I actually reached out to Chris and connected with him for the first time and said, hey, in my current school, I think we're at a really pivotal moment in our time here where coaching could really improve the culture of the place, but it could really improve a number of aspects of what we're looking at in terms of leadership and management. And so engaged Chris, and he came out and started doing some workshops with our staff. And at the same time, I started doing the full suite of Growth Coaching International programs and offerings. So starting with the Introduction to Leadership Coaching program, moving on to the Accreditation program, Advanced Coaching, Coaching Solutions Focused, you know, coaching approach to difficult conversations. I basically went through the full suite and wanted to become an expert in coaching myself. So alongside rolling out a systematic and structured coaching approach in my school, I was also trying to position myself as an expert in this space as well. And so over a number of years, we continued this and it had a really significant transformational effect in that school at that time. And I've brought that experience with me. We do things a little bit different now here at Westbourne, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute, Richard, in terms of what we're currently doing at Westbourne Grammar. But I think that is where I really encountered coaching as a professional practice and something that could have the transformational impact that I was looking to put in place at the school.
Yeah, it's safe to say you immersed yourself in things right up to your neck. But again, you know, you made the comment that, you know, you're there as a lead learner. You know, you need to take the lead in it and at least investigating these things and finding out with a bit of rigor whether there's something that we want to get into or not. You know, and there'll be things out there that you can investigate and think, well, maybe that's not for us. And that's part of the role of a principal, in my opinion, in many ways as well. So as lead learner then, I mean, was there then really at Westbourne a tipping point for introducing coaching? I mean, was there a particular challenge or opportunity you thought, you know what, this is the right time for us?
Yeah, I think when I started at Westbourne, it was very much putting my finger on the pulse and figuring out where we were at and potentially where we wanted to go and working with people to develop that vision, that strategy, and then give them a seat at the table. And contextually, this environment was right to introduce something as significant as coaching as part of our leadership and development work at the school, because people were crying out for a seat at the table. They wanted to be involved. They wanted to be joining committees. They wanted to be engaged in the development of strategy. They wanted to contribute to the advancement of the school. And so all I really needed to do was provide an environment and the opportunity for them to be equipped with the requisite skills, tools, attitudes, attributes, dispositions to be able to solve problems, to be able to be solutions focused, to be able to show initiative, and also to be able to engage in conversations that mattered with their peers. Because there was a little bit of a culture here at when I started of, you know, people saying, well, that's not my job, or that's not my fault, or, you know, that's leadership's problem, you know. And nothing really grinds my gears more, Richard, than people saying leadership, you know, it's the leadership's problem. Well, who are you referring to? Is it the executive team? Is it me? Is it, you know, let's be specific there. But anyway, the timing was right. And so what we did is we focused on intentional leadership, and we wanted to position everyone in the school as having agency, so that the culture we were building was very much centered around distributed leadership and empowerment. And so coaching wasn't the only thing that we focused on, but it was a very large part of it. And it emerged as a really key driver and powerful tool to empower staff to lead their own development, to see themselves as agents of change within our school context, but to also tackle complex interpersonal challenges that perhaps they were shying away from previously. Mm-hmm. So as a result, without sort of skimming too far forward over the last 4 years, it's had a transformational impact. And Westbourne is now a multi-award-winning school. And perhaps I'm a little bit biased, but you know, one of the best schools in the state, I think, and coaching's a huge part of that. But alongside that is our focus on people, Richard. And so, yes, coaching is important. Yes, leadership development. Yes, giving people a seat at the table, distributed leadership. They're all really important. But alongside that, what we also did was we recognized that the conversation around workload in schools is real. And it was real here, just as it is in every other school around the world. And so we wanted to provide the best workplace conditions that we can for our staff. And so we increased salaries so that they're in the top 10% in the country. We reduced face-to-face teaching time so that teachers had more time to plan and more time to collaborate with their peers. We removed unnecessary administrative work that wasn't really moving the needle or, you know, offering value. And we're providing, I think, some of the best professional learning conditions in schools, which includes international traveling fellowships, further study assistance. Like, we've got 17 staff currently doing postgraduate study in a university fully supported by the school. So it's an ecosystem, but coaching is definitely a central part in that.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful to highlight the fact that coaching is a part of what you're doing. I mean, when you mention some of those changes, there's going to be a long list of people that plan for the next post that you advertise after having listened to this episode. So apologies for that, but it's going to happen. But I appreciate that, that you've given us that context and, you used the phrase the environment was right. People wanted a seat at the table and you needed some sort of a mechanism to make that happen. And coaching would have been a part of that, an element of that, which I think is helpful for folks to hear. The blog piece on the school website, and I was intrigued by a number of pieces there by Amrita Ahuja, gives great insight into the coaching program. So you're talking in over the last sort of 4 years. From your perspective, and this is really, really helpful, what were some of the early challenges or barriers in embedding coaching in the culture of your school?
Yeah, and when we introduce any new change in a school, we're always going to come up with some challenges and barriers. And I think for us, it was probably not uncommon that the challenges we faced was addressing the skepticism and the misconceptions around coaching. It's not a performance-based or a performative tool. We're looking at growth and development as part of our approach. It's about equipping people with the tools to have better conversations. But the number one issue that we faced was the time commitment required for coaching. So you can imagine teachers saying, "Oh, so now we have to do this coaching thing. Are we going to get any more time for it? Are we going to get any more money for it? It's just another responsibility that we have to take on in our already busy days." Well, no, we spoke to people about the rationale. We said that initially there's not going to be any formal coaching structure across the entire school. Initially, this is going to be opt-in. And we framed much of this work around, yes, there will be a structured formal coaching opportunity for those who are interested, but much, much, much more, this was about framing the way that we are going to lead and learn together. So coaching as a way of leading and learning, or more simply, this is how we're going to talk with each other around the school. And so that was successful because we weren't forcing people into it. We were providing the opportunity and encouraging people to take it on. And in our first year, we probably had 60 or so staff really lean into it. In the second year, probably another 60 or so again. And then in the third year, probably about another 30 or so. And this wasn't just limited to our academic staff. It was open to our professional, administrative and business operations staff as well. So it was a really nice way to unite our community around a common approach.
I like that idea how you're bringing people on board over a period of time and it's not a forced thing. So there's, you come voluntarily to this thing that we're creating in school. And again, a key thing, and this is what, a message we've got to get out there is this is not performance related. Yes, it's about growth and development, but we're not here to assess it. We're here to provide you something for that through which to happen, to help you grow, as an educator. And not even just thinking about teaching staff or classroom assistants, but actually broadening that out to the whole school community. And that's where, that's a brave step. When I think about people who are skeptical about coaching or just unfamiliar, you're broadening it out to all of those different people. What would you say your experience was, just briefly, when you moved out of the classroom or out of those roles to bring those people in? Just briefly touch on that one for me.
We had the broad range of people and their opinions, of course. Some thought it was fluffy and a waste of their time, and but others really lent into it. And the way we framed it with some people, Richard, was we said, okay, you can come up with a goal and we can work with you on that. But that was a little bit too vague for some. So in order to get some momentum early, the way we framed it was, we talk about people here being humble, hungry, and smart. And hungry in terms of ambition. And that comes from Patrick Lencioni's work around the five dysfunctions of the team. But that is part of the language we use. And so we really leant into the hungry element of that triad. And we said, if you're ambitious, why don't we sit down and develop an individual career trajectory plan on a page for you with an end goal in mind? And then let's work back from that and let our coaches or myself work with you on putting the steps in place for you to realize that goal over a period of time. And that was really successful. Some others, though, another example just briefly was, in order to get some momentum early, we said, okay, depending upon the nature of your role, we know that in schools, visibility is really important. So we need to almost create a visibility strategy, a personal visibility strategy, so that you can clarify your own thinking and start making time for your different stakeholder groups. So you're maximizing your return on investment, if you like, in terms of being visible to others. So who am I visible to? When? How? And for what purpose? And really working back from that and coaching people through that journey so that they could get some clarity around the purpose of being visible, but also how they were going to go and do it, and then how it was going to be maintained and sustainable moving forward as a habit.
I like that idea that it's very much coming across as a bespoke approach. You're very much adapting to individuals because you've gone right across the board as far as, the different roles within the school, providing this for everybody in many ways. But you mentioned a key word there, not just bespoke, it's purposeful. So, we're thinking about those people who do see these things as it's a nice wee idea. And yes, some people say that this is, very fluffy or whatever, there's no substance to this, but you're trying to create something where you're convincing these folks that this is genuinely purposeful and it will have meaning for you. We'll go back to those two phrases, for your growth and development, which obviously is what has given it a certain amount of traction, across the school. If we think about impact and transformation, what would you say the impact has been of coaching on you personally as a leader? So we're going back to leadership here again. How has it changed how you, Adrian, lead, or how you even think about leadership?
That's a really good question, Richard. I think if we just go back to the modeling for a second, I think one of the other things that has had a real big impact on the success of coaching and a coaching approach to leading here at the school was the fact that we model from our senior executive team the fact that coaching is about growing, is about developing, and it's about accessing your potential. And so the executive team all have access to external executive coaches if they wish. Not everyone takes it up, but 70-75% do. And even I have had an external coach in the past, and we talk about it. We talk about it. We talk about how important it is to have someone who can guide you through things that you're working on, and so I think that has actually had a really big impact across the organization too. Because if people see the executive team having a coach, well, others will see that. Oh, okay. So this is what this coaching thing's all about. So that modeling is really key. But I think going back to your question, the impact that it's had on me personally, I think it's made me more reflective. It's definitely made me more empathetic. And a lot of the feedback I receive from others is that I'm really patient. And I'm not always patient because because sometimes I want things done yesterday, and you know, and but I think what coaching has done is it's definitely made me more patient, because it's shifted my focus towards others. It's not me. It's about others. It's about the school. And I think it's really emphasized to me the importance of curiosity and being a really good listener. Because in our busy schedules, particularly as a principal, we could have back-to-back meetings every day. You know, not every day, but, you know, our day could be back-to-back. We have things that pop up that are unexpected that we need to deal with. And so it's just about reframing and recentering and refocusing every time that you have an individual or a group of people in front of you, and understanding that at this point in time, there is nothing more important than being an active listener, a deep listener to what's happening around you, listening to what people are saying, but also listening to perhaps what they're not saying. Yeah. And looking at every situation through the lens of perspective and a solutions focus. So I think that's probably, for me, the impact that coaching's had on me as a leader.
Yeah. Profound in many ways. So becoming a much more, and I use the word becoming, it's an ongoing thing, becoming a much more reflective leader, being, and you really highlighted this, a better listener, more intentional about your listening, and then that key word, perspective, you know, having that really good perspective as a leader. So that's very much around you and your leadership. So how have you seen the coaching shape the leadership capacity of your staff? You have a big group of people there, and both academically, but just, you know, professionally in general.
Yeah, it's, I think there's intangible benefits that we've noticed, but there's also tangible benefits that we've noticed. I think definitely our leaders and managers across the school are feeling more equipped, more confident, and more empowered, which is amazing. And I think, but more generally, colleagues across the school, even if they're not leaders or managers, I think they've become more confident decision makers. And I think they've become more collaborative and definitely more solutions focused. And that's had a really profound shift on our culture, I think, overall. And from my perspective, one of the things that I've noticed, don't have any quantitative data on this, of course, but one of the things I've noticed is that one of the benefits or one of the outcomes has been a noticeable shift in the number of issues that are being escalated to me as principal, because issues are being dealt with at the appropriate level of the organization. And that's a great thing.
And it's interesting, you mentioned, you know, quite often when we're trying to measure something, our go-to normally is data, you know, numerical data, and we're trying to, you know, really pinpoint something, and that can be really helpful. But in your comments there, Adrian, what I really notice is that phrase, what I have noticed is, so your perspective on what you see other people do compared to what they maybe have done in the past. That's really really important data. And you've used a couple of keywords there. You know, staff here are now feeling equipped and feeling confident and a lot more solutions focused as a result of that. And then that's going to have, as you say, a significant impact on your role. Fewer issues or challenges coming to you that didn't necessarily need to. And they're not coming to you, and we're not saying, well, that's great, I have a lighter load. They're not coming to you because they've been resolved by your colleagues. And I go back to that word then, they're more empowered as a result of that. And the empowerment then leads to more confidence. And that's very much a cyclical thing. You know, so you can see how that coaching as a way of leading has impacted right across, you know, a significant number of people, which is, you know, quite inspirational for the folks that are listening. I wonder, could I ask you, are there any particular stories or moments that stand out for you that, you know, times when coaching made just a real difference? It might just be, you know, a one-off conversation, or maybe a decision you made, or just, you know, the whole dynamic of the team, something that we could listen into.
Yeah, sure, Richard. I probably have a few. They range, you know. Like I remember working with a senior leader here at the school who was anti-coaching, and then over a period of 2 years, actually became the biggest advocate for a coaching approach to leadership. So that was quite transformational. Now I can't credit that to the work I did solely. Like that was a range of factors that contributed to that. But that was a really great story. But I think there's a great young leader here at the school, brilliant, passionate, incredible work ethic, high expectations. But she was stuck in the weeds and really trying to do everything. And then as a result, questioning whether she was actually cut out for the role. And so I remember, you know, being very deliberate and intentional in terms of coaching her around her mindset and around what it means to be a leader and her identity. And you talked about this before in terms of becoming, repositioning her identity from being a doer to having an identity of becoming, and recognizing that leadership isn't always about the doing, but it's about empowering others to get the work done. And so that was a really memorable moment for me, because over a period of about 6 months, this one leader was leading one of the most high-performing teams in the school, because she'd just shifted her mindset slightly to not taking everything on herself, but delegating and empowering her team to do the work. And so that was great. But I guess some of my most memorable moments are coaching young aspiring leaders, you know, and that's one of the things that gives me a lot of joy in my work. I can be having the worst day, but if I've got a meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to coach one of our emerging or aspiring leaders, their energy, their enthusiasm, their thirst for growth, it's infectious. And it reminds me about, you know, what's possible when people are given the right environment to grow and to thrive.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. One of the privileges, you know, being ahead is that joy of being part of that enthusiasm and being able to facilitate and encourage it in many ways. But particularly whenever that enthusiasm started out as significant resistance. I mean, you mentioned in the early part of your answer there that first member of staff, 2 years. I mean, that's the sort of time period we're talking about for ahead to see, in some cases, to see improvement. And that was turning the ship, you know, to go back to that book you mentioned. Right. So that's you know, that's really inspirational for those of us who are listening as heads in many ways. Let me go back to Amrita's research, because in there, and you've touched on this, and I'm really intrigued in this, the idea of shifts in active listening, questioning, and you've mentioned this idea of a more empowering style of leadership. Have you seen this show up in ways that benefit student learning and well-being?
Yeah, we have. Our vision here at the school is shaping learners who inspire the world, but increasingly we're talking about shaping the next generation of leaders. And what does that mean? Like, when our young people graduate from our school, what do they need to have to be the leaders that they both want and need to be, or that we both want them and need them to be, which is just as important, I think. And so we actually have a student coaching program where students engage in the same training, age appropriate, around the growth framework to be able to help them have an introduction to coaching approach, which has been really powerful. But I think the most powerful thing has been the way we've introduced a coaching approach through one of our curricular offerings. So we introduced a program here at the school at the start of last year called Echoes and Dialogues. And it actually replaced our chapel and chaplaincy program here at the school, because we have a very multicultural school. We have over 70 different nationalities and 35 different faith backgrounds. And so we're 160 years old as a school as well. And so we had historically a focus on the Christian faith. When our chaplain resigned a couple of years ago, we deliberately did not reappoint a chaplain because we wanted to go through a faith and spirituality review to get our community's input in terms of the value they placed on that or otherwise, and what they might like to see in its place. So to cut a long story short, we pitched this idea of replacing a focus on a singular religion with a program of philosophy. And so we called it Echoes and Dialogues. And the way we framed it was that we were going to invite our young people to participate in the intellectual traditions, you know, in the Enlightenment or the Renaissance, and through to the, you know, Socratic questioning, Platonic dialogues, rigorous debate, you know, answering the big questions of our day, exploring epistemology and theories of knowledge and ontology, but framing it in the context of the big issues of our times. And so that program is just going from strength to strength. It's now in its second year. And what we are doing is we're giving students a platform to be able to safely question each other and question the world of around them. And so they're engaging in questions, they're engaging in debate, they're debating the big ideas, the controversial issues of our times. They're engaging in new experiences, they're seeing possibilities, but most importantly, they're learning to understand difference and to see things from different perspectives without becoming emotional about the issue at hand. And so a coaching approach is absolutely informing that work, because we're giving students the tools, we're inviting them into new learning around how to engage in dialogue and debate. And it's still early days, given the fact that it's only the second year of the program. But at the moment, it's amazing to see, and it's definitely having a huge impact on student agency, but also their well-being, because they feel as though they can talk about the things that are actually mattering.
I like that. And again, it resonates with that idea of potentially turning around a ship. You mentioned an extensive period of history that the school's been there. And then moving to this idea of echoes and dialogues, that's a significant shift in the history of the school. But to hear that positive, you know, positive outcome of, you know, dialogue, debate, perspective, that your students are developing those skills and being able to have conversations where you can agree to disagree in a investigatory way, you know, finding out, you know, about other faiths, other religions, other perspectives. Your values, and it's very clearly comes across on the website when folks have a look at it, but Westbourne's values, courage, community, creativity, and scholarship, obviously very alive in what you're doing. How do you see coaching, Adrian, contributing to living out those values?
Yeah, it's a good question, Richard. I think for us, we've had this focus on moving from values to lived virtues. And that's been a sustained effort across our school, because we know in schools, most schools have a set of values, and values basically are what we believe in. But I think virtues are how we live those values. And so that's been a big focus for us in terms of looking at the complete fabric of school life. And how do we incorporate this through our curricular design, our pedagogies, our pastoral programs, our co-curricula, et cetera? And it really involves engaging young people in real conversations. And so we have a variety of mechanisms across the school where we can really live those values. Because I think ultimately when values become visible, when they become real, when you can see it, when you can feel it in everyday actions and interactions, the community grows stronger. So coaching's played a big role in that in a number of ways. And we always connect what we do back to our values. So courage, for instance, courage is one of our values. What does that mean on the ground? What does courage look like? Well, you know, courage could look simply like having conversations that matter when those conversations need to happen. You know, and so we're always connecting back to those values. But for us, I think the diversity of our community is one of our strengths. And so really uniting around our values as a set of lived virtues has been a really powerful motivator and led to some really great impact.
Yeah, certainly sounds like it. And I just like that idea of moving from values to lived virtues, and that'll make a lot of people think, you know, when they're listening into this particular episode, which we appreciate. It sounds, I mean, again, each time you're chatting, like a very, very busy place. Now, when we think about leadership development, and we've talked a number of times today about development, it can sometimes feel just like another thing to what I can imagine in your school is already a group of very busy educators. So what have you learned about making this, yes, meaningful, but I think an even more key word here is sustainable. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's hard. It's tough. I think schools are busy places. Ours is no different. There's a lot of competing priorities, a lot of tensions. And if you're not careful, you know, the cliche is if you have too many priorities, you have none. So one of the things that we are constantly battling with is making sure that this work continues to be front and center in what we do. I think probably the simplest answer, which might not be a satisfactory answer, Richard, so challenge me if you feel as though you need to. But I think the simplest answer is we just constantly talk about it. It's part of our everyday language. Like if we're sitting down in a one-on-one meeting, the deputy principal could be working with the head of senior school and they might be working through an issue and they might say, well, let's try this coaching thing. let's work through a coaching process now, or it's just part of the way we talk to each other. Okay, what's our current reality? You know, what are our goals here? What options have we considered? You know, what are some ways forward? And then how do we make those part of our what tactic could we use to make this become habitual? You know, so it's just part of our dialogue and the language we use, which I think is continuing to have momentum across the school. It's definitely something people continue to talk about, and it's definitely a framework or an approach people are using in their day-to-day.
Yeah, I like that idea that the momentum is continuing to happen. You're noticing that it's an ongoing thing, and it has to be, you know, to keep it sustainable, people need to be able to see that ongoing momentum, you know, increase. And again, you know, you talk about how you, the conversations you have, and yes, this is what we talk about, and it's in our everyday conversations. And Chris Monroe would use that phrase, this is just the way we talk around here. And that's essentially what you're trying to aspire to. This is part of who we are. In many ways, we go back to your phrase, you know, moving from values to lived virtues. So coaching is about action. What's gonna happen as a result of our coaching conversation? We're gonna try and live this out. So if I arrive into your school, you know, on an ordinary Wednesday afternoon, spend an hour talking to different people, I would start to notice how people talk, and they would use the vocabulary of coaching just naturally, which I think is really helpful for folks who are listening.
I think you would definitely find that, like, you know, let's be honest, not everyone across the school is talking like that and thinking like that. Like, I'm a realist, but I think you would definitely, if you spend some time here, you would definitely notice that for sure. You would definitely observe that. But I think the other point that I didn't perhaps include in that, Richard, which is equally as important, the way we make it sustainable and the way we continue the momentum is we don't just offer, you know, a sit and get experience where, okay, you've done your day of professional learning now, you've done your 2 days or your 5 days or whatever it is. We're continuously engaging people in professional learning in a cyclical manner, either as refresher or for new staff that are joining us, bringing them up to speed, or we're looking to extend those who are wanting to extend and increase their understanding and knowledge and confidence in coaching as a practice. So there's some significant financial investment in that as well.
That's a fair point, and I'm glad you included that one, Adrian. Let's broaden it out a wee bit. We're coming towards the end of our conversation, but I think this is really, really interesting. So we talked a lot around Westbourne, and there's a lot of amazing things happening. So let's even broaden that out a bit more. What role do you see for coaching in shaping the next generation of leaders in education? So not just at Westbourne, but, you know, more broadly than that.
I think, where do you start? I think it's vital. You know, I think coaching is a vital leadership practice for shaping the future of not just Australia, of the world. You know, we look at some of the things that are happening around the world now, and I think if more leaders were deeply reflective and good listeners and emotionally intelligent, self-aware, I think the world, you know, would be a better place. And so I think coaching can significantly enhance and change the way people view the world, not just in schools, but in all organizations. And I think it can lead to greater impact, not just from an individual perspective. It definitely assisted me in my growth and development, and is definitely part of who I am as a leader now. But I think more importantly, it can have that organizational impact or that societal impact, which is going to be so important moving forward, because we're moving forward into an increasingly uncertain world. And, you know, I was watching a documentary last night on AI and what could potentially happen by 2027. And I'm thinking, wow, we're only just scratching the surface on that now. So what does that future look like? And so, yeah. So I think coaching is definitely going to be a really important, tool in a leader's toolkit.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's important for us as school leaders to be thinking about the bigger picture. But coming back to the fact that we've got all of those young people coming into our care every day, and that's, you know, those are the people we're trying to impact the most, to give them those, you know, skills of, you know, perspective, of asking good questions, of listening, you know, listening properly, listening intentionally. So that when they do leave school, and that's going to happen, you know, that's inevitable, they move out into society and hopefully will have, you know, that same impact that you and your leadership team and your staff are having on them. And that's going to benefit the community locally and, you know, further afield, depending on where those young people go. I mean, it's very clear that there's an awful lot going on, and we've talked about busy people. There's a great amount of achievement in your school as far as the coaching culture goes. And you mentioned AI there in the broader context, and that is very much a hot topic. What would you say is next for coaching at Westbourne?
Well, just leveraging off that AI point, one of the things we've been focused on the last 12 months is using AI avatars as knowledge concierge services. And what we mean by that is I've got an AI avatar which looks like me, sounds like me, can respond in real time to one of 50 different languages, and it is embedded with a knowledge base based on a number of things that I've written, my PhD, the school context, the school history, and anyone can now interact with that in real time and talk to me in one of 50 different languages. Now, we won't sort of labor the point, because there's so much I could talk about in that space. But I think increasingly we're going to see more technology-driven solutions in the coaching world. Now, that doesn't mean that we remove the human element of that at all, because that is absolutely vital. I think human-to-human connection is foundational. But, you know, technology is going to be able to amplify and to really leverage things in completely new and unimaginable ways. So I think we're going to see that. I think Marshall Goldsmith, you know, one of the world's top coaches, has a similar version of himself, a digital twin, where you can pay a subscription to and you can get his coaching advice and expertise by interacting with a digital replica of him. So I think that'll become more prevalent. But I think for here at Westbourne, so we'll look at technology-driven solutions, but we'll also look to continue to embed a coaching culture. And I think the next leverage point for us is to really take what we're doing with students through our Echoes and Dialogues program and really take that to new heights. Yeah. And so one of the things that's happening at the end of this year with our senior prefect team, our student leadership team here at the school, is they are going through a bit more of a rigorous program related to a coaching way of leading. Mm. And so I think we'll continue to look at staff, but we'll also increasingly have a focus on our students as well.
Yeah. And that's interesting. And yes, you're right that, you know, artificial intelligence will play and continue to play a huge part in coaching. But to go right back to the very start of our conversation, Adrian, you mentioned the idea of people first. You know, there's programs in there, there's other bits and pieces, but people will always be first. And I think if we can keep that perspective, we're on the P's now. If we can keep that perspective, you know, we will be on a sensible trajectory as far as managing all of the new technology that comes in. But very much watch this space, I would say, at Westbourne. Finally, what one advice would you give to other school leaders? So the folks listening into this right now here thinking about introducing coaching in their own context. Any simple ideas about where they should start?
I think coaching flourishes in environments where there is already trust and genuine dialogue. Now, not all environments have that to begin with, but that is foundational. I think the advice I would give is don't try and make it a mandatory program across your entire school. I think you'd be setting yourself up for failure if you do that. I think in my experience in different contexts, the best way to introduce something like this is to start with your early adopters, the people who are keen, and then continue to build momentum around those. And you will, if you have a sustained focus over a number of years, you will reach a tipping point where a majority of people are really loving it and thriving with it. So that would probably be my advice. And the only other piece of advice is, you know, the best time to start looking at this is probably yesterday. The second best time is now. So, you know, so jump in and start learning yourself if you're curious. And then look at ways that you can start rolling this out systematically across your school or organization, because it can have a really transformational impact.
Yeah. Wise words indeed. Adrian, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you today. We've covered a great deal, and I'm grateful for your time and preparation for this, but also setting aside time to record the conversation with me today. And I'm sure a very, very busy schedule in your role. On behalf of GCI, I want to wish you and your team at Westbourne continued success in further embedding your coaching culture. For our listeners, I'm confident that Adrian's story today has sparked some fresh thinking about leadership, culture, and the power of conversations that empower others. For more information on coaching, please do take the time to visit our website, growthcoaching.com.au, where you can access information on our courses and indeed make use of a vast array of free resources such as other podcast episodes, digital newsletters, coaching articles, and much, much more. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with a colleague and ideally subscribe so that you don't miss further conversations with us. I hope you will join me on the next episode of Coaching and Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.